Let's talk now about who's involved in a feedback conversation, right? When we're talking with a teacher one-on-one, we have observed or we have looked at some form of evidence about the teacher's practice, and we're there to talk about the teacher's practice and hopefully improve that practice. It's tempting to think that the number of parties in the conversation is simply two, right? There's the instructional leader, there is the teacher. Isn't that it? I want to argue that there is actually a third participant. Of course, there is the teacher, there is the instructional leader, but there is also a set of expectations, a set of shared expectations that I call an instructional framework. And we're going to spend all of Module 4 talking about instructional frameworks. But for now, I wanted to introduce that instructional framework as a participant in your feedback conversations with individual teachers. So if we think about it as a something of a diagram, what we're talking about is the evidence. And the parties that are talking about that evidence of practice, whether we're talking about an observation, a video, a teacher-created artifact, a teacher-curated artifact, or maybe we're looking at some student work, whatever we're talking about it with the teacher, and we're talking about it with the framework or with the set of shared expectations. So let's look briefly now at each of those three roles. It is the teacher's role in that conversation not to passively receive feedback, not to simply accept compliments and suggestions and justify their own decisions and promise to do better in the future, as can sometimes happen with the feedback sandwich. But it's truly the teacher's job to own the outcome, right? If we are talking about teacher practice is something that the teacher owns. I, as an instructional leader, cannot own the teacher's practice, because ultimately, moving forward, it's going to be the teacher's professional judgment, the teacher's decisions that determine what happens with student learning. And it's the purpose of this conversation to shape that professional judgment, which again is something that the teacher owns. In order to participate effectively in this conversation, the teacher has to be willing to examine the evidence honestly and to be able to hear maybe things they were surprised by, be able to hear maybe things they didn't want to hear from the instructional leader, to honestly convey what they need to know in terms of kind of where their own practice was, so they can make some decisions about it. I'll never forget when I was a new teacher, my principal observed. I had a wonderful principal, and she was doing an observation of a science lesson that I was teaching to my middle school students. And I had to really force myself to examine the evidence honestly when she said, Justin, at one point, we were a couple minutes into the lesson, and you told the students not to stick their magnets on the electrical outlets, which, is pretty important for safety. And I said, oh yeah, as soon as I saw them doing that, I knew I had to say something, because it's a huge safety issue. And she said, well, Justin, how long do you think they were doing that before you noticed and said something about it? And I said, no time at all. I immediately noticed and did something about it. And she said, no, it was about 7 minutes. And I had to examine that evidence honestly, right? And of course, trust plays a big role there. But if we want teachers to examine that evidence honestly, they really have to own their own professional growth, right? That's a critical ingredient in a feedback conversation. For the leader's role, what are some of the factors that we need to consider for our own participation in these conversations? Well, one of the most important things that we do as leaders is present the evidence. We may actually be collecting the evidence, just as my principal was timing, how long it was before I said something about the magnets on the electrical outlets. We've got to actually be able to make that evidence available to the teacher so that we have something to talk about. So documentation is part of that, and kind of framing it and bringing it to the teacher's attention. And then it's not enough to simply present the evidence. We actually have to strive to develop what I call the insider's view of the teacher's practice, and really seek to understand what's going on in that teacher's head, what's going on in their practice, and what they're striving to accomplish in the lesson. If we don't strive to develop that whole iceberg view, we're going to end up focusing on things that aren't really at the heart of practice and that aren't really even worth our time talking about. So we've really got to get at that insider's view of practice, right? What was the teacher trying to accomplish here? How did that go? And where do we want to go next in terms of making things even better? If our goal is to simply provide a feedback sandwich, then it's okay that we miss those substantive elements, right? We talked earlier in this module about how the feedback sandwich is an artificial structure with a compliment, a suggestion, and then another compliment. And once we've filled those three slots, we feel like our job is done. That is not a practice-changing conversation. To really change teacher practice, we've got to get at the heart of it. We've got to get at the teacher thinking and decision-making, because as Charlotte Danielson says, this is cognitive work, and improving it involves and requires cognition. Now, a very important factor in that cognition is the language we use to think in, right? We think in particular language, we think with particular vocabulary, and having shared vocabulary is critical for shared sense making, right? For shared understandings of what we're doing, what we're talking about, what happened with the lesson, what could have gone differently. We've got to have shared language and shared understandings in the format of a framework. So that format, that framework plays a really critical role by being a third party, right? You notice there's never three-way tug of war. Like that's not really something that that exists as a metaphor, but I feel like the tug of war metaphor is pervasive in feedback conversations. Even if we don't state it as a goal, it really is how a lot of these conversations operate, especially the ones that we feel like kind of don't go very well. There's an adversarial nature to feedback conversations that I think is inherent in the way we set them up if we're not careful. So let's say it's your goal as an instructional leader to help the teacher identify something that they want to improve. That goal stands in direct contrast to the teacher's goal of looking competent, right? Of course, the teacher probably wants to improve, but a much more immediate and pressing goal for the teacher is to be satisfactory, right? To not be unsatisfactory, to not be seen as incompetent. And those diametrically opposed goals can lead us into some very difficult and unnecessarily awkward feedback conversations because we are not allowing the third party in that conversation to do its job. When we don't allow the framework, the third party, to be the standard of excellence, to be the vocabulary, to be the rubric by which we judge, practice, and examine evidence, then we place ourselves as instructional leaders in a role that we should not occupy. We should not be the standard. We should not own the standard for professional practice. It should exist outside of ourselves, and it should exist outside of the teacher as a third party, a neutral third party that can serve as the arbiter and as the standard of effective practice. So the framework's role is really critical here, and that's why we're going to talk so much about frameworks and how to develop them in Module 4. They really are the vocabulary, but they're not just words, they're not just terms, they're actually expectations that are aligned, that are arranged. So for example, Charlotte Danielson's framework for teaching is a four-level rubric that's broken into domains and components with very specific descriptions so that when you see practice, you can look at that rubric, you can look at that framework and figure out what level of performance fits the evidence that you're seeing, right? Those qualitative descriptions that clearly distinguish between levels of performance allow the framework to do the heavy lifting. They allow the framework to be the bad guy so that if practice is poor, you don't have to be the one to say, you know what, I didn't like that today. I thought it was crummy. That's not your job when the framework has a seat at the table. You are able to point to the evidence and point to the framework and ask, where do you think we are? What level of performance does this evidence align with? The framework gets to be the bad guy, and you get to be a conversation partner, a thought partner, a supporter, and a planner with the teacher to identify those next steps for improvement. And if you're using a well-designed rubric like the Danielson framework, the rubric itself creates the next step, right? It creates a roadmap for growth because if someone is at a level two, all you have to do to figure out what do we need to do next is look at level three and level four. Where does this teacher's practice need to go? It is probably spelled out if we're using a high quality rubric. So we want that rubric to be shared. We want it to be something that we're all invested in, that we all believe in and trust as an arbiter to describe and judge what good practice looks like. And we want people to internalize that over time, right? Ultimately, we want people to do the right thing and to use best practices because they've internalized them. But until they get to that point, we want to establish those expectations as shared expectations, right? We don't want people to just look to their mentor teacher for what to do, right? We want to have a shared organizational set of expectations at the school or district level that provide that standard and serve as that third party in the conversation, because chances are good that a majority of your staff is in that pre-professional stage. And this is really where you have the biggest opportunity to establish shared expectations for, you know, for you to have an influence on people's own kind of internal locus of control, right? If they're looking to that sense of shared expectations already, well, you can influence what those shared expectations are much more than you can influence what a mentor teacher says or what somebody on the internet says in an article that a teacher's reading or what that teacher's own professional judgment is. This is our big opportunity to give the framework, to give the shared expectations a seat at the table in those feedback conversations. And it's important that we articulate these clearly, because so often our shared expectations have never been made explicit. They are only implicit. They are implied. They are in the back of our minds. They color everything that comes up in the conversation. They are the vocabulary that we use, but often we use that vocabulary without ever defining it and without ever putting it in writing and saying, this is how we do things. This is what the expectation is. This is what good looks like. This is what great looks like. If we're never explicit about it, it's going to be very hard to use those shared expectations in the way that we can if we have them in writing. So again, we'll talk much more about that in module 4. But for now, go ahead and pull out your journal and reflect with me for a moment. In your school, what tacit expectations are teachers working from right now that have never been stated outright, right? Teachers believe that they are supposed to do X, or if they do X, they're doing a great job, but it's never actually been stated outright. What tacit expectations do you see teachers working from? And then second, what expectations do you have that you've never actually put into writing? Maybe you've said things that were based on those tacit expectations, but you've never really articulated, this is what I expect you to do, or this is what I believe a best practice looks like. Search your own feedback that you've given recently and ask yourself, what were some of the expectations that I really need to make more clear and state outright so that we can have better feedback conversations? When you've done that in your journal, you're ready to move on to the next section.